It is Thursday, September 23rd. Welcome to Minutes of Sports, episode 164. We are excited in Buckeye Nation today. I don't know if you say excited, but big news breaking. CJ Stroud not expected to play against Akron, and we will talk about it as we get into the show. But boy, is this big news. We're going to get to see Kyle McCord, I assume. That's who it should be. If it's not, I'm turning in my card. He absolutely needs to be the starter for this game. I'm not saying he's better than CJ Stroud, but he needs to be the next man up, and we're going to find out all about him. But before we get there, let's talk about the show, what we got coming. I got something to tell you about here in a second. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen, so I want to tell you about that. But after last weekend, I absolutely destroyed college football. If you listen to the show, you know I took Florida plus 14.5, crush, South Carolina plus 31. That actually snuck in the back door and hit. Took some couple money lines. If you didn't hear it, listen to last week's episode. Picks went absolutely crazy on Saturday. Would have hit better on Sunday if Clyde Edwards-Helaire hadn't fumbled for the Chiefs, but all in all, had a big, big weekend. If you're interested in gambling, check out Menace to Picks at Menace to Picks on Twitter and Instagram, or patreon.com/Menace to Picks. Get geared up with all the picks. We got a sports book that'll give you free money coming up mid-show. It's MyBookie with the promo code Menace. So if you want to wait for the ad, wait for the ad. If not, check it out on MyBookie.ag. Peep that, and it's really, really, really cool. So before we get to the show, I do want to tell you about this thing that I found out about. Cool as shit. It's called Prediction Strike, right? Prediction Strike is basically, I'll say, like stocks or mutual funds on players, right? So you can go in, and for instance, so a friend of mine told me about it. I reached out to them and to find out more about it, and they were interested in the show and the platform. So here we are. But I'm coming to you as someone who uses it. I've used it so far. I mean, just started when I found out about it. But you buy stock in players, right? For example, you could have bought Jonathan Taylor last year, running back for the Colts, at $2.15 a share in mid-November 2020, and he ended the season at $6.15 a share. So that money grows, right? You gain money, a gain of 186%. It's awesome. So if right now, if you're telling your friends Mac Jones is going to be, you know, the rookie of the year, buy that shit right now low, and he'll hit, you know, you could quadruple your money. It is wild. So all you have to do is go to predictionstrike.com and create an account, and you deposit money in, and it's just like E-Trade or anything else. It is badass, and it's fun as hell to try to buy, like, you know, under the radar guys, rookies maybe that are going to explode, like Justin Jefferson would have been a great one, still probably is a great one. But all you got to do is download Prediction Strike's new app in the App Store, or by just go to predictionstrike.com, sign up with the promo code Menace, and you receive a free share of an athlete when you deposit $20 or more. So that's a way to get started, and that's predictionstrike.com. Use the code Menace. They gave me that code because I'm telling you, it is fucking sweet. You're going to love it, and just go try it out. It's really cool. It's like mutual funds or stocks for players, for NFL players, for college football players. So check it out. I promise you won't regret it. Anyways, enough about that. Let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
All right, we got to start off with the lead story in the Midwest, in Big Ten country, and in Buckeye Nation, CJ Stroud not playing versus Akron. And it's coincidentally announced 20 years to the date when a great Hall of Fame quarterback for the New England Patriots got hurt and a young Tom Brady came in his relief. Tom Brady's career took off because of an injury to Drew Bledsoe. The question is, will that be the case for Kyle McCord? Is this the beginning of the end of CJ Stroud in Scarlet and Gray? And will Kyle McCord take this opportunity and run with it? What an absolute nightmare for CJ Stroud. And what an opportunity for Kyle McCord. Because listen, here's the problem, right? They play an absolutely awful team. And not that Ryan Day doesn't have the balls to make the switch if he thinks that it's deserving, or to ride with CJ Stroud, even if Kyle McCord does well. But Akron is one of the worst pass defenses and defenses in the United States of America thus far in 2021. They've allowed a 77% completion percentage, 129th in America. They have the 75th pass defense in America as far as yards per game, the 113th third down defense, the 125th red zone defense. They allow almost 90% touchdowns in the red zone. So you talk about a nightmare for an already disgruntled fan base and really country at CJ Stroud. And I've been a defender of CJ Stroud, right? I think some of his criticism is unwarranted, though he did not play well against Tulsa. I thought he played really well outside of four throws against Oregon, played really well in the second half against Minnesota, struggled in the first half. That's expected. So the question is this: if Kyle McCord comes in and absolutely fucking kills it, do they go back to CJ Stroud? Like, how do they do that? And Kyle McCord, anyone, any of those four kids that goes in this game should kill it against this defense. So this is a nightmare for Ryan Day, for Corey Dennis, for Kevin Wilson. It's a nightmare situation, or it's the perfect storm. It's the perfect excuse to make a switch from a guy that struggled hitting some wide open guys, right? Will Kyle McCord take advantage? That's the question, right? Everybody else is playing. I mean, there's not a guy on that roster that can cover any of the eight receivers on scholarship. I mean, Jeremy Ruckert, if needed, will dominate this game. We know Travion Henderson, what he'll offer in the run game. Mayan Williams is expected to be back playing now that he's hopefully back in good graces. So the run game will be on point. Play action should be just, I mean, dudes running butt naked like streakers at the Super Bowl. I mean, this should be, you talk about an opportunity. My God, I want to go play for this game. It's an opportunity of a lifetime for any quarterback to have their first chance. This is what CJ Stroud should have had, right? He should have had an Akron to kick off the year to really get people's dick hard over him, get them excited, right? That's what he should have had. That's what most players have, right? Most players at big time programs have kind of one of those MAC games or one of those easy games. Albeit, that's what Tulsa should have been for him too, right? So I'm not going to talk much about the Akron game, but good Lord, this is major breaking news. And it'll be interesting to see kind of who plays on defense, right? Are they going to rotate some guys in? Is Taraja Mitchell back? Will EA play more snaps? He's been probably the best linebacker, though he's only played a handful of snaps thus far this year. I mean, granted, he was only announced eligible, you know, the Friday before, I think it was Oregon. So it might have been Minnesota. Either way, he certainly wasn't repping with the ones because he wasn't eligible. So it'll be interesting to see. I wanted to talk about that quickly because it's such big news. But nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Lane Avenue is what this is, or this is a blessing in disguise for the Buckeyes, for Buckeye fans, and for the Buckeye offense, because they could use some dominant quarterback play right about now. Got spoiled with Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields, who came in and just lit the fucking world on fire. CJ Stroud has not done that, but he's not been bad. I still am a CJ Stroud fan and believe that with development, he will get it done. Get it done. But moving on from that, want to talk about a potential upset alert. Rutgers, Greg Schiano travels to Michigan. Rutgers 3-0, haven't really played anyone. I think Syracuse, Temple, somebody else, doesn't matter. The missed tackle prediction right now has Michigan winning the game. Rutgers has allowed 27 missed tackles, around 9 a game. Michigan 19, about 6 a game, 6.33 a game. So Michigan's defense has been tackling better. I'd say both opponents' schedules have been pretty similar, unless you want to count Syracuse as better than Washington. I'd say that's kind of a wash, if you ask me. But when I look at this team, and I watched a little bit of film on them, I didn't dive too deep into it, but I obviously will as the season goes on, and Ohio State plays Rutgers, and then obviously for the game, there'll be a deep dive. But The Rutgers have a quarterback that is a game manager, Noah Verdell. So if you're going to watch the game, check him out. He's a game manager, right? He's 50% on 10 deep balls. He has only attempted four passes from 10 to 20 yards. So like I said, most of his yardage and production and his throws have been short throws, really short throws. Matter of fact, 41% of his passes have been behind the line of scrimmage, screen plays. So literally the game plan from Greg Schiano's offense has been launch it deep or dink it. Dink and dunk, right? That's been his attack plan. And 50% on 10 deep balls is pretty respectable from Noah Verdell. Michigan's Cade McNamara on the other side of the ball hasn't really been tested. I mean, he sucks under pressure. He completes 72% of his passes when he's not pressured, drops to 38% under pressure. He's only attempted 9 passes over 10 yards. He's averaging 12 total attempts per game. So let's not act like Cade McNamara is some fucking savior to Michigan. He hasn't done shit yet. They haven't needed him to do shit. And he's only attempted 9 passes in 3 games over 10 yards. So the question is, can Michigan throw it when they have to, right? And move the ball. They've played dog shit for 3 games. Will they be able to move the football on Rutgers or anyone that, you know, Rutgers is probably what, at best, bottom of the middle tier of the Big Ten? I mean, that's at best, right? Greg Schiano definitely has them exceeding expectations and playing well. But right now, statistically, Rutgers has the best passing defense in the Big Ten. They only allow 46% completion percentage. They've only given up 1 touchdown, and they've gotten the ball 3 times through the air, 3 interceptions. So it's going to be interesting to see if Michigan can throw the ball on Rutgers. I mean, this will be their first quasi-test, right? Michigan has Cornelius Johnson, this poor man's Devin Smith, who leads the Big Ten in yards per catch, 27.5 catches on 6 catches. But again, I take their opponents into account on that, as you have to everyone, right? Where Ohio State's played Minnesota and Oregon, and Tulsa wasn't a bad offense, at least. I mean, you got to look at who they played. Michigan's played directional schools and a Washington team that lost to Montana. But I think the key stat of the game, you want to watch this game, here's going to be the key stat to who wins or loses. When Michigan has the football, what happens on third downs? Because Michigan is number 1 in the Big Ten converting, and Rutgers has the number 1 third down defense in the Big Ten. They're number 2 in America. They've only allowed 17.5% conversions, and that's Schiano's like a NFL background, right? Just kind of side note for Ohio State fans: number 1 in the country is Boston College. That's the past 2 Ohio State defensive coordinators, number 1 and number 2 on third down. Current defensive coordinator, Kerry Combs / Matt Barnes, or whoever's going to call the plays this weekend, 126th in the country. So the question is, do you want either of them back, Schiano, or I know everyone wants Halfley back, but would you take Schiano back at this point? That's a real question. But we're going to find out if Michigan's for real. That's what we're going to find out. Schiano has this overly analytical approach, especially to third down. It's such a money down, such a situational deal that game to game, his game plan changes. And I think, honestly, I think Rutgers surprises people. I don't know that they'll win the game, but my money is on Rutgers to cover the spread. I think it's 20 points or something like that. I think Rutgers covers the spread, and my money's also on the over. So I'm starting to give you my gambling predictions because they've been fire so far. I'm 100% teasing Rutgers in the over for probably a big play. I think that's a money play. I think that's going to hit. I think Rutgers at least keeps this within a score-ish, right? 9-10, 7-point win for Michigan. But don't be surprised if we find out that Michigan's a little bit phony, especially on offense. Is Cade McNamara really an answer? We're going to find out. I mean, when a guy's only attempted, 9 passes over 10 yards? Yeah, you really don't know much about the kid yet. So be interesting to see how that plays out. But if you want to bet, tease Rutgers and the over. I think that is a cash money parlay or play if you're a big sports gambler. Well, and then another game that is, I'm putting it on upset alert, right? Upset alert, Clemson has to travel to NC State. I think everyone knows my feelings on Clemson. They have looked below average. People will tout their defense as something special this year. Great defense, struggling offense. I beg to differ. They looked great against Georgia, who literally had a decent run game with no pass game. No receivers. JT Daniels is one of the best in the country thus far this year, but he's had almost no one to throw it to. So they will tout Clemson as this dominant defense. And I even put it out there on Twitter and in our latest YouTube video, like who would win today, Ohio State or Clemson? And I honestly don't know. I think obviously different issues, right? DJ Uiagalelei has been struggling. Probably I talk about the big three a lot, CJ Stroud, DJ Uiagalelei, and Bryce Young. DJ is certainly third of three by any stretch of analytics or film study. He absolutely is. And so who would win that game? Ohio State or Clemson? Ohio State's defense has been struggling. I know Buckeye fans are awfully in their feelings. So I've been getting... I've been getting both responses, right? The blind Buckeye fans that are like, we have better players and they would show up and we would dominate Clemson. And you're like, okay, I don't know about the word dominate, but, and then the other side are Buckeye fans who are, you know, the world is coming to an end. They believe the earth is flat and doomsday is upon us and the black plague will kill us all. Right. They're like, Clemson would destroy us. Our defense would give up 700 yards. And I mean, they got a point too. I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. But this Clemson team is not the Clemson team we've watched for the last, I don't know, 7 years. I mean, from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to now DJ Uiagalelei, they're not the dominant team that we've watched. Their run game is average. They don't have Travis Etienne. They don't have, you know, Sammy Watkins on the perimeter. They have guys that are have potential, but honestly haven't done shit ever. I mean, ever. Justin Ross was really good 2 years ago, hasn't played, and I think, honestly, he's a non-factor with DJ Uiagalelei right now as the trigger man. But those are my thoughts on Clemson. NC State, here's the thing about NC State. They have been able to run the ball. They're second in the ACC with 5.7 yards a carry, and Clemson has been okay, I'll say average, at stopping the run. They're not as dominant as box scores and ESPN would tell you. Both teams have been decent, NC State throwing the ball and Clemson defending the pass. So this is a pretty even matchup if you ask me. Clemson really can't throw the ball for shit, and NC State has the top pass defense in the ACC. So strengths and weaknesses match up in NC State's favor, in my opinion. I mean, right now, Clemson's thrown 2 touchdowns to 3 interceptions against Georgia, South Carolina State, and Georgia Tech. Georgia, South Carolina State, and Georgia Tech. Those are the 3 games they played. Outside of South Carolina State, they have not thrown a touchdown. They didn't throw a touchdown against Georgia or Georgia Tech. They struggled against Georgia Tech, who's a bad team this year. I mean, really, a struggling rebuilding team. So how good is Clemson? And I know you can't do the whole, well, this team beat that team and that team beat that team. I know you can't do that. It's week to week. Teams improve. Teams turn the ball over. Teams play, you know, different ways week to week. But this Clemson team has yet to show me a game where they were dominant, if you want to call South Carolina State, but come on, fuck off. That's not even close. And then you look at defenses. Venables, vaunted defense. They're averaging 11 missed tackles a game, averaging with a South Carolina State game in there, Georgia Tech game. I mean, Georgia with not, honestly, not that great a skill on offense. I mean, they are not tackling well. This Venables defense is not fundamentally sound or enhanced. They're not helping themselves any type of way. 11 missed tackles a game. NC State's the opposite. They're very fundamental. They're not as talented as Clemson. So what wins? Fundamentals or talent? NC State is averaging 7 missed tackles a game on defense. I mean, it's honestly, fundamentals will probably win this game. Fundamentals are why Georgia Tech kept it close. NC State is a much better team than Georgia Tech. So if both teams show up as I would predict them to, I think NC State has a legit chance at home against Clemson. If they can rattle DJ Uiagalelei, get after him, pressure him, if they can get them to turn the ball over, watch out for the Wolfpack, man. I'm just telling you. Right now, if you look at gambling trends, 77% of money is on NC State to cover the 10-point spread. And the over honestly looks inevitable to me. Now, if you want to talk about gambling, I'm teasing it again. Plus 16 NC State and over 43.5 for a lock of the fucking the history of the universe. Again, another one. We hit the last one, the Florida one, right? I told you that one. That was a lock of the history of the universe. That one cashed. This one's going to cash. NC State plus 16 and over 43.5. Tease it. Mark it down. And I'm also throwing some cash on an upset parlay here in a second that people are going to call me crazy. But people call me crazy that Bama was not going to roll Florida and that was going to be a close game. People call me crazy about almost every bet I picked. I think, what was the other one? Cincinnati beating Indiana. That was, people called me crazy. Notre Dame was going to struggle against Toledo. People called me crazy. So call me crazy or ride these bets with me. I'm telling you, you're going to make some money. Take that teaser. While we're talking money, before we get to, we're still going to talk about A&M in Arkansas. And then obviously we have to talk about the game of the week, Wisconsin, Notre Dame. At least that's my game of the week. I guess A&M Arkansas is pretty close. So those are the 2 games of the week. Coming back after a quick break and a quick chance to get some free money. Check them out. We're putting them on social media, putting them everywhere. Get some free money and ride these picks with us and check out MyBookie. Here's a message from MyBookie. The NFL is back in action and so is winning season at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money, winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to mybookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs, highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week one, don't even sweat it, because entries are still open, and all it takes is one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't just take my word for it. Join now and start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at mybookie.ag and use our promo code Menace, M-E-N-A-C-E, to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code Menace. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, just check them out. If you support the show, please support our sponsors. Obviously, the better those ad campaigns do, the better, you know, the more happy they are with us. And we've been plugging MyBookie for 3 years. They've been loyal to us, and we appreciate them. It's a good offshore sports book. Check them out and use the promo code Menace. You'll get some free money. But let's talk about the SEC game of the week. A&M at, well, you say at Arkansas. It's at Jerry's World, so no real home field advantage. But this is a battle of pretty even top. What Menace to Sports has is the top four teams in the SEC West, right? You go A&M, Arkansas, Bama, Ole Miss, all right there in the mix. If Auburn is fifth, as we talked about after that Penn State loss, I think Auburn is clearly fifth. They could pull an upset off of one of those four teams, but it'd be interesting. What if Auburn goes 1-4 against, or 0-4 against those four teams? Yikes. But I think this is a big matchup, man. A&M struggled with Colorado. Arkansas beat an improved Texas team. Honestly, Arkansas has been really, really impressive this year. Sam Pittman's doing an unbelievable job bringing an element of toughness, a gritty run game to Arkansas. And Arkansas's offense has, you know, they've been better than they have been, but I think they still will be an Achilles heel for the overall outcome of this game, as A&M might be more of a complete team. A&M lost their starting quarterback, Haynes King, in the Colorado game. And this storyline, honestly, is poised for an upset. Third downs will be very, very evenly matched when you watch film on these two teams. When A&M has the ball on third down, I mean, they're sixth in the SEC, 49%. Arkansas's third in the SEC on third down defense, 28%. So I think that's, pretty advantageous Arkansas when A&M has the ball. But then when Arkansas has the ball, honestly, they're both bad. I mean, both of them are 10th in the SEC, offense and defense, 39% for Arkansas converting, 35% for A&M stopping people. It's honestly, I think that's the game right there. When we go back to it, I just said that about whatever game we just talked about. I think Clemson. Arkansas with the ball on third down, that is going to be the storyline, right? If they can hit around 50%, I think Arkansas has a chance to pull this one out. If they hit low and A&M's defense shows up on third down, I think A&M wins the game. I think that's literally the stat of the game, right? It's pretty even for Arkansas on offense. And so whoever has that advantage, I think, wins this game. They definitely have the advantage when A&M has the ball. Red zone advantages, A&M's last in the SEC at scoring touchdowns in the red zone. On par with Arkansas, right, who has allowed 50% touchdowns. They both have scored and allowed 50% touchdowns. So when A&M's in the red zone, I think it's a wash, right? Another opportunity for one of them to gain an edge in the game, right? That's what you look for as a coach, as an analyst, as a fan. You look for, all right, where are they evenly strong or weak, right? Do you have the best rush offense against the best rush defense? If you do, someone is going to win that battle, right? The battle of the best. It also applies to battle of the worsts, right? When teams are really bad at something and their counterpart is all equally really bad, someone is going to gain an advantage there. So you look at this game, when A&M's in the red zone, that's an opportunity for an advantage, right? And then when A&M has the ball on third down, or when Arkansas has the ball on third down, there's a chance for an advantage there. That's two advantages that can be gained in this game. Whoever gains those two advantages will win this game. Mark that down. Arkansas, when they have the ball in the red zone, they're tied with Bama, 63% touchdowns, which is, I think, ninth in the SEC. But A&M's red zone D has been outstanding. I mean, 33% touchdowns allowed in the red zone is ridiculously high. So I think you have two advantages, two chances for an advantage that we just talked about. Also, Arkansas is running the shit out of the ball. A&M struggling in rush defense, which is surprising. I mean, they're 12th in the SEC in rush defense, 4.1 yards per carry. And Arkansas has like five guys that run the ball that are averaging from 5 yards to 8.5 yards per carry. So Sam Pittman has a rushing attack for the Hogs that is, I mean, it's been whooping people's ass. And I think the difference, key player in this game, the key person to watch is Arkansas's quarterback KJ Jefferson, who has kind of exploded onto the scene this year. He's been playing outstanding, dual threat guy, has almost 200 yards rushing, two rushing touchdowns, averaging 7.5 yards per carry. And honestly, he's been doing really well when Arkansas can protect him. I mean, he's 5 for 8 on deep balls. 63% is very high, very, very accurate. Almost 60% on throws over 10 yards, very accurate. So he's exceptional. If they can keep him clean, those stats that I just told you and the film shows, he has a chance to make great throws and really vaunt this offense over the hump to win the game. The issue is this. His pressure is his kryptonite. He drops from 70% completion percentage to 30% when he's pressured. And A&M has taken advantage of their below average protection teams. They have 46 QB pressures in 3 games. So another chance for an advantage right here. A&M gets after the quarterback really well, right? Arkansas doesn't throw the ball well under pressure. And the other caveat to that is Arkansas's pass pro has been very, very good. They've only allowed 13 quarterback pressures this season so far. And I think that, honestly, that's a huge part of this game, right? When Arkansas's throwing the ball, can they protect KJ Jefferson? If they do, watch out. Watch out. Arkansas is going to win the game. You look at their defenses, honestly, stout defenses, but extremely sloppy. Both average double-digit missed tackles. A&M has 31, Arkansas has 33. Negligible the difference, right? Both average double-digit missed tackles. That's a bad deal, right? But where weaknesses meet, there's a chance for an advantage, right? I think this is a dead heat game. I really do. I could see either team winning. I think A&M is more capable of turning shit up, kind of tightening things up, maybe not missing as many tackles. I think they're a far more talented team, but I'm still taking Arkansas on a big upset in Jerry's World in Dallas. I really am. I think Arkansas wins this game and kind of lets the country know that they're not just some fluky team that beat Texas. I'm taking Arkansas to beat A&M. And I've said all along, A&M might be the best team in the country, but the more I watch them, the more they're ways off. And that's why I don't know who the best team in the country is. I couldn't pick it right now. If you put a gun to my head, said who's going to win the national championship, if you put a gun to my head and said who's going to make the playoffs, I don't have a fucking clue. Bama is down. A&M is sloppy, right? Georgia doesn't have offensive firepower. Georgia's probably the best team in the SEC, honestly, on film, especially if they get some wideouts back. JT Daniels, best quarterback in the SEC thus far. Maybe you could convince me on Ole Miss. We haven't talked a lot about Ole Miss, so we'll wait and see on Ole Miss. I haven't studied them as hard, but I will this weekend, considering Ohio State has Akron. So a little less time on OSU, a little more time on the Fighting Lane Kiffins, Joey Freshwater and his Ole Miss Rebels. But getting to my upset parlay, I will be wasting $50 from my huge weekend last weekend and throw it on this underdog parlay. Arkansas and NC State money line, $50 to win what? I think 800 or 400. $50 to win $400. Throwing 50 on it. If you want to throw $10 on it to win 80, I'm telling you, this one has a chance. I'm not sitting here saying I would put I'd put 100 on it or 200 on it if I thought it was a surefire underdog parlay, but I like it. I like it enough to throw 50 on it and just cut my losses if one of them loses. I think it's got a real chance. So there you go. There's my underdog parlay of the week. Check that out. And I think Arkansas pulls this one off in a huge upset. And people start talking about Arkansas as a legit contender, and that'll reverberate through recruiting. Now, reverberate. They got money in Arkansas. I think Tyson Chicken money or some kind of billionaire money. So watch out for Sam Pittman. He's doing something at Arkansas. I'm telling you, watching him on film, that rushing attack, their quarterback is poised and does a good job. If they can have some good pass pro and win those key matchup advantages, I think they got a real chance to win this game. All right, the last game we're going to preview is the Midwest Game of the Week, Big Ten Game of the Week, and certainly the Independent Game of the Week, Wisconsin versus Notre Dame in Chicago. Amazing how both of these games of the week are neutral site games, and getting to some, I think, Josh Pate, if you don't know, late, I think it's Late Kick with Josh Pate. He's probably my favorite analyst, honestly. He's phenomenal. I mean, absolutely outstanding. Great content. Not only is he kind of a broadcaster type of guy where he speaks well, everything is very entertaining, but he also, his takes, every time I watch him, I'm like, fucking A. He's on point. Like, from a coach's perspective, this guy gets it. So if you haven't checked him out, check him out, look him up. But he's the one that said it, and I could not agree more. This neutral site shit is fucking awful. Do home and homes, man. Get the pageantry of college football up, right? Wouldn't you love to see Notre Dame have to go face jump around in Camp Randall, or have Wisconsin go walk past Touchdown Jesus and try to beat the Golden Domers? Wouldn't you love that? Who the fuck wants to go to Chicago? What, it's Soldier Field or some bullshit? I don't even know. It might be Wrigley Field. They may be playing on ice. It might be like one of those hockey games. It's just bullshit. This neutral site shit. How awesome would it be if A&M had to go at Arkansas? Wouldn't that be badass? Get a better chance of an upset? But anyways, I'll get off my soapbox talking about that. But these neutral game sites suck. Maybe, like, that's what bowl games are for, right? Championship games. Those are neutral site games. Leave them at that. Play these regular season games at home and homes. Get some big-time college pageantry. Please, for the love of God, from all fans everywhere. Put it in on campus. Anyways, talk about the game. Biggest thing, biggest news, biggest key factor here that I haven't heard anyone talk about yet. I'm sure they will by the time the games roll around once they realize it, or if they listen to the show, they certainly will add it into their talking points. But Wisconsin's coming off a bye week. Do you know how huge that is? On a number of different levels, right? They've had 2 weeks to prepare for Notre Dame. They could ease off the players, the big time players, the guys that played a lot of snaps in week one, week two, last week, give them some rest, get them healthy, get them strong, legs come back a little faster. You know, your legs get worn out in training camp. And when you roll right into the season, that bye week is huge for treatments. I mean, you get those Normatex compression treatments, you get ice cryotherapy treatments, needlings, all these things to get your legs back to fresh. Wisconsin, I mean, you talk about being set up for success. Coming off a bye week for this game is huge. I would say this. Let's talk about when Notre Dame's on offense, Wisconsin's on defense. Obviously, Wisconsin's only played two games. Penn State game was disappointing for them, but their defense played outstanding. They're only averaging 6 missed tackles a game. You talk about Wisconsin. You talk about toughness. You talk about fundamentals, tackling, and usually you talk about running the ball, right? Usually that's what their offense entails. And about a million tight ends, right? Running the ball, tight ends, big-ass offensive linemen, road-grading people, throwing the ball when they need to, and fundamentals. And that's, this defense is outstanding. 6 missed tackles a game. And they're facing a Notre Dame offense that is, I would say, in shell shock right now. I mean, they have the 115th run game in the United States of America. 2.9 yards per carry. And they're playing the top rush defense in the U.S. of A. Wisconsin's allowed 33 yards per game, 1.8 yards per carry. So you talk about a strength versus a weakness. I bet you Notre Dame ends with negative yards rushing. This offensive line, I mean, you know what it is. This offensive line was the best offensive line in the country at Notre Dame, and this year they're awful. I don't know how else to put it. They're awful. Here's how good Wisconsin's been on defense. Not only are they only giving up 1.8 yards per carry, but no one's even trying to run it on them. They have averaging, through two games, 18 rushing attempts per game. That's 4 less than Army, and anyone else in the country. I mean, they're number one in the country at the least number of rushing attempts because people don't even want to run it on them. And then Notre Dame throwing the ball has been just okay. I mean, they're the 59th most efficient passing offense in the country, 63%. Wisconsin's been pretty solid against the pass. I mean, they're not as dominant as the run game, but they're a top 20 pass defense. They've only given up 1 passing touchdown in the first 2 games. And so it's going to come down, can Jack Cohn actually throw the ball in this defense? They're not going to be able to run the ball. I mean, he's the 30th ranked graded passer in Power 5 football, according to Pro Football Focus. And he's decent at getting rid of the ball. That's what he does. He doesn't take sacks. He gets the ball out in, on average, 2.7 seconds, which is 31st in the country. Not bad. You look at his deep ball percentage, 30%. Not very good, right? 6 of 20. So they've launched it downfield quite a bit. 43% on 10 over 10-yard throws. That's okay. I'll give him okay. Like a couple of the other quarterbacks we mentioned, he struggles with pressure. 69% with no pressure, 46% with pressure, right? Now, that being said, as good as Wisconsin's defense is, getting after the quarterback has not been their strength. I mean, 28 pressures in two games, 14 a game on average. They only have four sacks, which is 95th in America right now. So they're not getting after the quarterback. They're not going to, I don't think they're going to pressure Jack Cohn. It's a matter of if he can connect on more of those deep balls and hit those intermediate throws, right? Notre Dame, now, that being said, Notre Dame's O-line, I mentioned it before, has been awful, pitiful, disgusting. The tackle duo, Tosh Baker and Josh Lugg, have given up 16 pressures between the two of them. You add in their struggling right guard, Caden Madden, and the trio have given up 24 pressures in three games amongst three guys. You add in their worst run blocker on offense, their left guard, Zeke Cornell. This unit went from the undisputed number one O-line in college football to, I don't know, abysmal, awful, bottom of the barrel, which is not something that Brian Kelly and Notre Dame are used to. They're used to having a dominant O-line. You look at their offensive skill. I mean, Kyron Williams is a really, he's a dynamic guy, but he doesn't have those gaping holes that he used to run through last year, right? He's averaging one less yard per carry, and they played basically dog shit in three games, right? Florida State, Toledo, like, what are we talking about? And he's averaging one less yard per carry. This defense is, I don't know, 10 times better than Toledo's or Florida State's. So, especially rush defense, maybe 100 times. So, Kyron is a much bigger threat in the throw game, mainly because of the offensive line. You combine him with Michael Mayer, who's one of the best tight ends in the country. He's second, has the second most receiving yards by a tight end in the country behind Colorado State's Trey McBride, who is a really, really good player and an NFL prospect for Steve Adazio. But Michael Mayer is a really, really good threat. You look at their two receivers they throw to, Avery Davis and Kevin Austin, both, I don't know, we'll call them above average. Kevin Austin is a big target. I really like him, but 140th graded receiver in the country. Avery Davis, 80th graded receiver in the country. They don't have overly dynamic weapons in the pass game. They're equipped to have a stalemate with this Wisconsin secondary. That's what they're equipped to do. On money down, they're 86th in the country on third downs, 38%. And they're facing the fourth best third down defense in Wisconsin, 21%. So again, strength versus weaknesses, advantage Wisconsin. Red zone touchdowns are 4 of 6 touchdowns, minimal opportunities for Wisconsin or for Notre Dame. They haven't been in there much. Wisconsin's been a brick wall through two games, only allowed opponents in the red zone four times and only gave up one touchdown on four. So 25% is freaking ridiculous. So this Wisconsin defense has a very, very big advantage over the Notre Dame defense. When you flip sides of the ball, Notre Dame averaged 9 missed tackles a game. Not great. Flirting with that double digit. That area, that atmosphere. And the reality is when I look at that, 9 missed tackles in a game against Florida State, Toledo, like, come on, man. That's double digits against a good team. It really is. They have probably the best defensive player in the country in Kyle Hamilton. I mean, he's the 6th highest graded safety in Power 5, 5th best in coverage, leads all safeties in Power 5 with 3 interceptions. Some of the plays he's made have been absolute highlight reel, insane. He'll be a first-round draft pick. He's a stud. I think the game comes down to this when you talk about Wisconsin's offense, right? Jack Cohn is gone. Man, that's the storyline here, right? Jack Cohn versus Graham Mertz. Graham Mertz, the Wisconsin heir that Jack Cohn left, and Graham Mertz is the guy. Here's what Graham Mertz does. He gets the ball out. He's 7th in the country getting the ball out of his hands. 2.39 seconds. So that's huge. That's huge getting the ball out. That shouldn't be a lot of sacks as long as he continues that. He's the 58th ranked graded passer in the country. He's yet to hit a single deep ball. So you can talk about Danny Davis all you want. They haven't connected for a single deep ball in their first two games, 0 for 5. He's 39% over 10 yards, 50% in 10 to 20 yards, which is below average, and he's abysmal under pressure. He goes from 74% to 36%. Part of it is throwaways, kind of why his completion percentage drops a little bit in under pressure. So he's been abysmal under pressure. He's not been great over 10 yards, hasn't hit a deep ball. I mean, honestly, this is the biggest concern for Wisconsin, right? Because Notre Dame has Isaiah Foskey, has 3.5 sacks already. He's a decent player. He's benefited from below average opponents for sure. But the left tackle for Wisconsin, Tyler Beach, has been a major liability in pass pro. So watch for that to be a difference maker in the game. He gave up 7 quarterback pressures against Penn State. Watch out. That left tackle spot, watch what he does. Wisconsin's offensive skill is just average. I mean, Danny Davis is their top playmaker, and he's just not a game breaker. He's a really solid Big Ten receiver, and I think that Notre Dame will not really have a problem with him, to be honest with you. The question is this. Can they stay on the field? Here's another chance for an advantage, right? Weakness versus weakness. Wisconsin's 92nd in the country in converting third downs, 36%. Notre Dame has been very below average, allowing 37% conversions. So it's weakness versus weakness. I mean, that's a chance for one of these two teams to have a high impact in the game. The other money down that we talk about, third down and red zone, they go hand in hand, right? Wisconsin 120th in the United States of America scoring touchdowns in the red zone. 120th. 50% of their red zone trips have resulted in 7 points. That is bad. Notre Dame is a top 25 red zone touchdown defense, 42%. So that's an advantage Notre Dame. When you look at this game, I mean, you really have to look at the complete picture. Obviously, everything we just talked about, I think Wisconsin's defense is a difference maker. The biggest difference maker in this game is coming off of a bye week. I think Notre Dame has zero rushing yards against this defense, the most stout defense they will play all year. They're going to struggle. And not to mention, they have Cincinnati next week. This is a brutal stretch, two-game stretch for Notre Dame, especially after playing poor, essentially in two games and then beating a Purdue team by 14 that stinks. Both offenses are very average, and that's being nice. I'm being nice when I say both offenses are average. It's going to come down to the best defense, right? And if I'm throwing out a score or prediction, I think Wisconsin wins this game 24-20. I think they pull the game out of whatever, Chicago, out of the Bears stadium, maybe. If I'm betting the game, I'm taking the under 46, or I'll tease it to a minus half a point Wisconsin and under 50. I love teasers. My teasers are usually pretty fire. I think this is an under game. I think average offenses against Wisconsin has a dominant defense. Notre Dame has a decent defense. And I think Kyle Hamilton being in the back end keeps this game under 50. I really do. That's with the teaser. I think it stays under 46. So you really want to, I don't know the Wisconsin covers though, but either way, that's my bet. That's my prediction. Wisconsin gets the dub against Notre Dame 24-20, starts the two-game skid for Brian Kelly as they lose this week and lose to Cincinnati next week. And everyone is wondering, is it time for Brian Kelly to go, right? This will begin the witch hunt to get Brian Kelly out of Notre Dame. And then does Luke Fickell trot his ass to South Bend, Indiana? That is the question that I have for you on Menace to Sports. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. What a little 42-minute quick preview for the upcoming games. Big news, C.J. Stroud will sit and rest his hurt shoulder, and Kyle McCord is the starting quarterback for the Ohio State University. Also, some big games, A&M, Arkansas, Wisconsin, Notre Dame. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I hope you're entertained. Hope you're educated. Hope you learned something, or hope you just enjoyed the show. And if you did, as always, if you could rank us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to this, give us 5 stars, leave a comment, help us make this grow. And if you're interested on our behind the scenes kind of VIP info or content, check us out at Patreon, patreon.com/menacetosports. You get a custom RSS feed, no wait time. Every podcast we do goes out right on your phone. So enough plugging. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you didn't, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.